Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Jeff Lindsay. He is the author of the brand new novel, Just Watch Me. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Dutton. Jeff, as we all have read, is the father of Dexter, the Dexter series that was turned into the great series on Showtime. Jeff wrote 8 of those novels, and that is now shelved, which makes me sad that Dexter's gone. But nonetheless, this new novel here, Riley Wolfe, another anti-hero. Jeff, you've come up with a gem here. Can you kind of explain what's driving him?
Well, Riley Wolfe is a master thief, and he's not a cold killer like Dexter, but if someone sort of has to have an accident to get his job done, he doesn't object, which is a big difference. He has a series of rules he works by, which I'm having fun with. They're called Riley's Law, and Riley's first law is the job comes first, which means if somebody's in the way of getting the job done, they gotta go. And the job for him is stealing things that absolutely cannot be stolen. They're impossible to get to. They're so well protected that anyone else would just say, nah, impossible. And absolute gravy for him, something that really makes him tick, is taking it from the 1%. The people who live a life of unearned entitlement. And that's a real thing with him. He's got to do it, and he's got to do it to them if he can.
What is his driving force? I mean, people are familiar with serial killers and the various reasons that they kill, and we can imagine some, and some are scientifically there. But what is Riley's driving force? Is it the same thing that would operate to make anybody do something they're passionate about?
I don't think so. I don't even think it's a normal motivation for a thief, because he's not really motivated by the money. I mean, he doesn't turn it down either. But what it is for him is the challenge. He had a series of traumas in his childhood, and I worked with a psychologist to develop these realistically, I hope. And he had a series of traumas that forced him to develop a lifestyle where he has to do things that people say he can't do. They can't be done. You'll never do it. Crawl back to your double wide, Mr. Trailer Trash. And that drives him on. And because it was, you know, the rich kids when he was young that were saying these things, that motivates him to do it against the 1% too.
If this was written as a book where we follow the hero that everybody can get behind and the protagonist of this book would be Riley Wolfe. The hero would be Frank Delgado, the FBI agent. In this type of scenario, it's reversed. And so Frank Delgado is working for the FBI. He's got this passion about chasing Riley Wolfe, but in my mind, as I read it, I kept thinking, why does he care so much about really a thief? And, you know, this isn't a serial killer. There's other bigger fish to fry. But in Frank Delgado's mind, there's not. So what's his motivation?
Well, in the first place, although Riley Wolfe is not a serial killer, he is a killer. And he's got a number of unaccounted for murders on his resume. And Delgado knows that. In the second place, Delgado has a little quirk in him that he just can't stand to see someone getting away with it. And this is a backstory thing that will develop through the series. But basically, the first time he went after Riley, not only did Riley escape him, but he kind of rubbed Delgado's nose in it. And now Delgado takes it as a sort of personal affront and a personal challenge. And in the same sense that Riley has to do impossible things, we've got Delgado balancing that on the other side by needing to do the impossible thing of catching Riley Wolfe when he doesn't really even know what Riley looks like.
Well, and Riley's a master of disguises, too, so that helps. But
right.
The big heist in this book involves the Iranian crown jewels, and they're on display in New York City. And I guess I'd never even thought about Iranian crown jewels. What are we actually talking about, and have you ever seen anything such as some crown jewels?
I've never seen anything like it, and I don't think anyone else who hasn't been there to look has seen anything like it. But from what I've been able to tell by my research, there's really nothing like it in the world that can compare. It's one small piece of it. The Daria Inur is the largest pink diamond in existence, and it's estimated to be worth $15 billion with a B, dollars. And the collection itself is so enormous and valuable that it's used to back Iran's currency. So you just have to imagine this endless array of diamond-encrusted chairs and ruby-encrusted combs and swords that are, you know, with a gold and platinum handle inlaid with emeralds and rubies and diamonds. And it just goes on and on. It gets a little ridiculous when you're looking at pictures of it, because you don't even think there's that much glass in the world, let alone jewelry.
Well, you know, Riley's also got a sense of humor here, just like Dexter had. And so from a literary standpoint, as you write somebody who's doing bad things, but you make him humorous, and everybody likes humor, how do you approach the type of jokes that you put in there for Riley to just maintain that sense of humor and make him sound like an everyman?
Well, something I found, you know, from my background, I did some comedy for a while, and I think that if you can do it at all, it's almost impossible to shut it off. So it sneaks in, and I try to make it, you know, appropriate for each character the way I would do it if I was an actor on a sitcom. You know, the weird Uncle Ned will tell a different kind of joke from what little Emily tells. So you try to put those clothes on when you're writing it and make the jokes appropriate to the character, but I can't turn off the humor, which I guess is a good thing.
Well, there's also a certain trick to written word comedy versus performed comedy, because you can write something that's funny to you because you know what the character looks like when he or she's saying it. That's hard to put on paper, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's just a matter, I guess, like everything else, a matter of practice, the 10,000 hours thing. It turned out to be the same thing with spoken comedy, which was one reason I stopped doing stand-up. But I guess I've just put in the time, you know, between writing plays early on and then getting the early books going. And it just comes now once I'm in the character.
I'm chatting with Jeff Lindsay about his brand new novel, Just Watch Me. The book is available now wherever fine books are sold, from the good folks at Dutton. Where'd you do stand-up at?
Mostly dumps, and I did a lot of MC work for some reason, which, you know, turns into stand-up. And it really started when I was running a theater, and I'd do the, you know, the annoying announcements that you do at the beginning of a show in a small theater.
Yeah.
And it started to become a stand-up act. And I was doing improv comedy at the time, so it seemed like a natural connection. And I really never did anything big or interesting as a stand-up, but I did get to, for example, I got to meet Robin Williams backstage, which was a thrill.
Yeah.
And I got to talk to some of the big people in the business. And, you know, it's not for me. It's something that you have to be dedicated to 24/7. And I have other fish to fry.
Were you trained as an improv actor?
Yes. I worked first with the Harvey Lembeck group.
Oh, yeah.
And with a group on the Paramount lot, and later something that was called the ABC TV, New Talent Development Program, which was an improv group. And, you know, I got sent up for some major parts on TV and movies, but they never clicked. And, you know, that put an end to my acting career, too.
Well, it seems like if we live in the heartland here, we know that there's two improv groups in the entire world. There's Second City in Chicago, and there's the Groundlings in Los Angeles. And that's about it. All we know, these improv groups are all over the place, aren't they?
Yeah, there weren't that many of them back then, and a lot of people in the groups I worked with went on to the Groundlings. I did one show with the Groundlings, but it was pretty much just backing up somebody. And it's really surprised me the way it's taken off recently. In fact, I was recently in Fort Myers, Florida, and they have some really good improv people there, and I was talked into doing an improv musical with them, Dexter the Musical, totally improvised, and that went really well too. So it's all over the country now. I'm not sure why, but you know, God bless you. Give it a shot. It's fun.
When you had the Dexter series going and you wrote those 8 phenomenal books, is there a chance that in the literary world, as there is in the acting world, that you can be typecast? I mean, I see Michael C. Hall now, and he's been in enough different stuff that it isn't so much anymore, but can you get typecast as, oh, that's the Dexter guy, and then nobody pays attention to anything else you do? Is there a risk to run with that?
Yeah, funny you should ask. That's exactly what happened. When Dexter was over, I sat down and wrote 3,000 pages of a fantasy series, because I like fantasy, and nobody would look at it. And I wrote a couple of other things that weren't quite right, and the publishers and editors were saying things like, what's wrong with him? He really should know better. And it turned out that when everybody said, no, you got to write something completely different now that Dexter's over, what they really meant was, write something exactly the same, but it looks different. So I started thinking about it, and I finally figured out it means an anti-hero. And I took some of the elements from the other things I'd been writing them and twisted them into this character, Riley Wolf, and moved on with it. And he's definitely an anti-hero. And that's what he came out of. I was totally pushed into this. Like I said, my first impulse was to write fantasy.
Well, thank God you were pushed into it, because I enjoyed this book so much. It's Just Watch Me.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's the latest novel by Jeff Lindsay. It's available now where fine books are sold. Jeff, just fantastic to talk to you, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.